Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Anna Voth. Anna is an experienced curriculum and instruction specialist with a demonstrated history of working in the education management industry. She is skilled in gifted education, classroom management, lesson planning, instructional design, and professional development facilitator, and a Colorado Department of Education trainer of trainers, also in differentiated instruction. She has a master's degree focused in educational leadership and administration from American College of Education. She currently serves as the Gifted Talented Curriculum and Instruction Specialist in Student Success Department at Jefferson County Public Schools in Colorado. Welcome to the podcast, Anna.
Thank you.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Well, this goes back to over 20 years ago when I was married. I'm single and divorced now, but I was in a marriage that was not fulfilling me personally, emotionally, or mentally or physically, and I was staying in that marriage for my two children, which I thought was the right thing to do. And my sister actually was the one that sort of woke me up and just told me, you know, what are you modeling for your son and what are you modeling for your daughter? And that was a huge eye opener because I realized that, you know, I thought I was doing the right thing by staying in this marriage, but I wasn't. I mean, I was being a role model that I didn't want to be. And so I got divorced, and which was scary because my ex-husband was not the most pleasurable person, I guess you could say. And I also, right when I was getting a divorce, I put myself through a master's degree program in educational leadership and got my administrative license at the same time. And since then, I'm in such a much better place and really just dug myself out of the trenches, went from really seeing no light at the end of the tunnel to just the world is my oyster, and just opening up all these different possibilities and everything. So that was the best thing that I could have done. And a lot of my friends and family ask me, you know, do you have regrets in life? And I always tell them, no, you know, I'm glad that I went through everything that I went through, because it's brought me where I am today, and it's made me who I am today. And if I wouldn't have had those struggles and had to dig myself out of the trenches, I wouldn't have realized that I actually could do that, and that I was a strong person, and you know, a lot stronger than I ever gave myself credit for, I guess you could say. So so that's my trenches story.
Yeah, it's so inspiring to hear how, you know, coming out of that marriage was a turning point for you, and that you were able to fulfill your best self, correct?
Absolutely, yes.
And you told me in the pre-chat how you taught in the classroom prior to your divorce, but then after your divorce, you could tell me a little bit about how you went into the instructional coach position and how you've done some training of PD with the Department of Ed as well.
Absolutely. So when I was married, I was a classroom teacher, mostly elementary. I did do eighth grade. science. Once I went through my master's program, that gave me more experience to become an instructional coach. And for those of you that don't know what an instructional coach is, it's actually a person that works with teachers and administrators to help them reach their full potential professionally through coaching and really using a lot of reflecting on what they're doing in the classroom at the time and how they can even be better in their craft of teaching. And so that master's degree allowed me to advance in my career and also make a better life for my son and daughter now being a single parent. Mm-hmm. And then from that, I was able to also engage in a lot of different trainings through the Colorado Department of Education and other workshops that were put on through other curriculum resources and become a trainer of trainers in a lot of different curriculum resources for teachers, mm-hmm. which helped me to be a better coach, mm-hmm. which helped them to be better educators. So it was sort of like a trickle down effect, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I was really excited to become an instructional coach because when I was in the classroom, I was affecting my students mm-hmm. and, 24 little humans. But when I became an instructional coach and was helping an entire school building full of teachers, I could be effective with a lot of students and a lot of teachers just because of that position. It allowed me to, I felt like just be more more of an effective educator, but outside of the classroom, I guess you could say.
Yeah, you were, your work extended beyond just the classroom you were in. It extended to the other teachers' classrooms.
Absolutely, yeah. And which allows me to touch more students and touch more community members, parents, teachers, administrators, everyone that, is involved in a school. So mm-hmm. it was a good move. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And that switch from teaching younger students mm-hmm. to adults, a lot of people warn me about that. Like, this is a huge transition. Mm-hmm, adults mm-hmm. are different, blah, 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 blah. But I was ready for a change. And I actually currently in my current position, I work with adults like 95% of the time. And I really enjoy it. I was ready for a change. I was ready to mm-hmm. Get out of the classroom and move on. And so it was a good move on my part for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we talked a little bit in the pre-chat that you're also an administrator for Sparks, which is the Summer Enrichment School for Gifted Talented in Jeffco.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the program and a little bit about how you made everything work last summer, one of the first in-person events, basically, for the school district.
Right. So every summer, Jefferson County, the Gifted and Talented Department puts on an enrichment school, so to speak, mm-hmm. for our students in the district that are identified as gifted. And we hire teachers to teach in that program. And then we advertise it and parents parents enroll their children in the different classes that we offer. And the classes are so much fun because they're classes that aren't offered in a regular school year. Mm-hmm. And that's like we have cooking, we have Lego, robotics, crocheting, textiles, all different kinds, fashion design. I mean, and so it's really fun for the kids, and it's really, really fun for the teachers that decide to teach it because they're teaching in an area that they're really passionate about. And it's being an administrator for that program is so rewarding because I get to see the teachers teaching in their element and really being passionate about what they're doing and not feeling like they have to post a daily learning target or they're getting evaluated. I mean, they're just truly teaching and doing what they love, and it really rubs off on the students. And you can see it when you're in the classroom. Everyone is just like so engaged and so motivated, and just lots of really, really fabulous learning that goes on. And so I've been involved in that for about 5 years. And this past summer of 2020, we really wanted to do the program, but we just weren't sure if it would happen because of COVID. And our cabinet members in our district really wanted us to put it on, and they wanted us to do it face to face, which was a huge sort of eye opener for us because up until that point, everything had been remote. And so we were kind of like going to be the guinea pig in our district and do this program face to face where, you know, no one had really done anything. And so we spent the whole summer planning it and put in all these safety protocols and making sure everyone was 6 feet apart, making sure that there weren't any more than 8 students and then 8 or 9 students in a class with the teacher. So 10 people in a classroom at one time. Masks, how are we going to bring the kids into the building? All those kinds of things that, you know, you don't think about when you're, and I don't like to use this word, but in like a normal school situation, but with the virus, we really had to take those steps because we knew if we didn't, one, we wouldn't get any teachers that wanted to teach. And secondly, we won't get any parents that wanted to send their kids because, you know, if the environment wasn't safe. And so anyway, after tons of planning, we did it and we pulled it off, and it was amazing and wonderful. And I'm so glad that that we did it face to face because the student success director, her in our district, her name is Susan Leach. She said something to me, and it really struck a chord with me. And she said, you know, if we don't start doing things like they were before, we're never going to get back to where we were before. And I really like that she said that because it sort of spurred us to do it face to face, and having her behind us and backing us and everything was really powerful. And the feedback that we got from the parents and the students when it was over was extremely positive. And so they were so excited to, the kids were so excited to be with peers and in a classroom setting, and the teachers, same along the same lines, were so excited to be with students in person, and also with their colleagues and fellow mm-hmm. teachers. And so it was so rewarding and so wonderful, and I'm so glad that we did it. And so yeah, even though it was a challenge, mm-hmm. it came out as a very, very positive experience.
Yeah, and that's great to hear. And it's also, it was key that it was backed by the cabinet in the district and the student success director, that, you know, she made that comment, and, you know, that you got all that positive feedback. So the kind of, I would say propelled, right, kind of the in-person learning that took place in the fall, because you have that data from your enrichment camp. And how many students roughly were involved with that camp last summer?
Last summer, it was a lot fewer than than we usually we have. We've had up to like 500 students enroll when it's like a non-COVID year. And I think last year we had about 200 kids that participated. We ran two sessions. We ran a morning session and an afternoon session, and taught the same classes each time, but had different students that came in during that time. And one reason why we did that is because by splitting the day in half like that, we didn't have to do a lunch time because we weren't sure really how we would coordinate that with COVID and everything. And so it worked out to split the day in half and do it that way. And like you said, it sort of paved the way for the future of this year, this school year, the 2020-2021 school year, with realizing that, you know, face-to-face is okay, and it is actually doable, and you can pull it off. You just have to take the precautions necessary.
And are you in the midst of planning a little bit already for this summer? And is there anything that's going to look different than last summer?
We are. We actually start planning right when we start the school year. So we've been planning since August. And because we weren't really sure like what was going to happen with everything. And I mean, how could we predict the future? We didn't have our crystal balls in front of us or anything like that. And so we decided, let's just keep it the way that we kept it. Mm-hmm. It increased the class size to, I believe, we're doing 15 students in the classes this year. And we did actually more teachers wanted to teach this year. And I think it's because they went through the past school year and had some face-to-face time and realized that, you know, it could happen and it was safe and everything like that. And so we have a lot more classes, a lot more staff, and are able to open it up to more students this year. But we are keeping the same things we're keeping it pretty much the same, where we have two sessions and we're taking all those safety precautions because, like I said, you just never know what it's going to look like this summer. And so, you know, we thought it best just to keep it the way that it was and just go from there. So yeah, I'm excited that, you know, we're doing it again, and we were able to offer it out to more adults and students as well.
Let's shift a little bit to what you see as major shifts that will happen at the K-8 level in the 21-22 school year in terms of curriculum and standards, since you've been involved in looking at that district and also in the district and with the Department of Ed.
Yeah, I, you know, it's really interesting because with adults being vaccinated and now having, there's talk around, you know, vaccinations for children and whatnot. As far as my district goes, it looks like starting in August, we'll be back to in-person, face-to-face learning. We did offer a remote program for families that did want to stay remote for the 2021-2022 school year. There weren't a lot of people that jumped on that bandwagon, and our initial plans in the district were to make that its own separate school, and it's still being talked about, but we really have to weigh how many participants we get.
Yeah.
And then the cost of, you know, employing teachers to teach at that school, hiring a principal, and all the other support staff that goes into running, you know, a remote school. So we'll see what happens with that. But as far as the majority of our students, they are coming back face to face. It'll be interesting to see what sort of safety precautions are put in place. And even how like art, music, and PE are run, and the lunchroom and everything like that, as more people are vaccinated. And more children probably will be getting the vaccine as soon as, you know, they run like the test and everything on that. And so yeah, it'll be really interesting. I think some positives that have come out of this past year, although there are few and far between, but one thing that I think is positive when we reflect on this past year is the fact that remote learning is a possibility. And that also means remote professional development options. I know we've done a lot of professional development this year, and it's been remote, and it's been really nice because teachers haven't had to drive someplace. After school, when they're tired, you know, they can participate asynchronously on their own time when they feel like they're ready to learn and ready to engage. And so I think that will probably, a lot of that will probably stay and not change, just because we've had such great positive attendance on that. In fact, something that a teammate and I do together is we run a parent workshop, I guess you could say. It's after our second graders in the district take the COGAT test, and the parents get the results of that test, and then if they want to, they can come to a presentation, I guess you could say, where we go over those results and talk about what they mean and sort of decipher the results that their child has earned. And usually when we do that, it's a face-to-face type thing. It's at our district office. And it ends up being like we have people standing and we have, you know, a lot of people that engage in it. But this year we did it remotely and our attendance was like three times what it usually is. And I think that's because people felt like, oh, this is great. You know, I'm going to engage in this in my living room after dinner. I don't have to get childcare. I can, you know, if I need to mute my camera or whatever because of something that's going on, I can do that. And we've also recorded the session and made it available to parents and had a lot of people that engaged in it that couldn't attend the live version. And so I feel like along those lines, professional development could really change mm-hmm. because, you know, we've seen that it's doable and it can happen and that we get good results from it mm-hmm. and that people are motivated and they're engaged. And so I think that those remote options, some of them will stay in place and mm-hmm. Along with the face-to-face as well. And so I think that's my biggest like aha from walking away from this year is that that's been a real positive item that's been put into place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
I think the fact that teachers can access that PD at their own time, right? They don't have to go somewhere after school and stay in some session for 3 hours when they're already tired from the school day. It makes a big difference. And I think more educators will take the PD offerings when they're able to access whenever they want.
Yes, you're so right in saying that. And we've seen it already. Mm-hmm. And so let's build on that, you know, momentum going forward and not change that. And I also think another thing, just reflecting on this past year, was how resilient our educators in our district are. I mean, mm-hmm. they went from face-to-face teaching to remote teaching overnight and had mm-hmm. to figure out how they were going to be the best that they could be in that remote instruction. And talk about a huge learning curve. Oh my goodness. And stress levels. And I mean, everything that's involved in that, but you know what? They did it and it was a work in progress for sure at mm-hmm. the beginning, but they just got stronger and better professionally in that. And I think that was a huge growth opportunity mm-hmm. for all of our educators in the district to realize their potential. Like, I mean, they don't have to be a face-to-face teacher. They can do this mm-hmm. with technology, and technology isn't scary, and they can engage in it and still have great outcomes for their students through that platform.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was something that, you know, people really given no choice on, but everybody was able to succeed in their own way, right? And a lot of teachers hadn't been using technology much, and you know, some people I think will still use some of the in-person strategies they've always used, but I think even if they weren't using much technology before, I think they'll incorporate more than they did prior to the pandemic.
Yeah, I think you're 100% correct on that. And that's the way of our world right mm-hmm. now. I mean, if you're not engaging in technology, it's like you're stuck back in the, mm-hmm. you know, like in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And if you want to be up to speed with everything that's current, you have to be engaging in technology. And so I think that's a positive, you know, that has come about in a very negative year and negative situation. But there are some positive things that came out of it, which, you know, I don't think we should brush under the carpet. I mm-hmm. think those need to be, you know, held up and realized by people that, you know, it wasn't all negative. There were mm-hmm. some great things that came out of this year.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to reflect on, whatever district people who are listening work in, and just kind of as the school year wraps up, reflect on those positive things and those ahas, those the growth areas everybody's had, right? Whether or not they kind of were thrown into it or felt like it was a steep learning curve, you know, now they have those skills, right, that they can use moving forward.
Yes. Yeah. Talk about a huge like growth mindset too. Going from, you know, like you said before, a lot of people maybe not engaging in technology with their in their classrooms and with their teaching, to fully embracing it and realizing that they can do it, and realizing that they can be creative within that, and still be passionate about teaching through that remote platform.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the new literacy program that the district is adopting, and how you know, that's maybe changing from what you guys have used before. You said it's bridging kind of a it's a new program, and how it bridges the curriculum. Tell me a little bit about the change
Before. We've never really had a literacy resource across our district that our K-5 schools were engaged in. A lot of schools just did, you know, whatever program that they had been doing. There, I mean, there's all kinds of different literacy resources out there, from just like independent reading to different like Basel readers or whatever that, you know, teachers have held on to. And so we, looking at our district data, we realized that our literacy needed some work, and that we should adopt a resource that that we could use across the district that that had all the standards involved, that had a Spanish component that was huge, that had a digital learning components involved in that, and then also a gifted component for enrichment for those students that already have the material, so that you can challenge them further. So initially, when it was proposed, there was a committee that was formed that looked at a whole bunch of different programs. They narrowed it down to three. And then some of us in the district were asked to be a part of the literacy review committee to look at those three that they had narrowed it down to. And so we spent, you know, like had a lot of Zoom meetings and had a lot of presentations that we watched. And we were able to even have schools sort of vet the different resources. And give their teachers give their feedback as to what they liked and what they didn't like. And so combining all of that into one piece and then deciding on which one would be the best for our district, we were able to narrow it down to one. I can't say what it is, though, because it's sort of not been publicized yet, but we're bringing that to the Board of Education, and they're going to vote on it, and then hopefully by the start of this year we'll have a district curriculum that is consistent across the board, because I think that consistency is huge, especially when you look at our Title I schools in the district. It's nice when like somebody from one school, if they happen to switch and move to another school, the curriculum that they're using is the same as where they came from. because it's hard enough to change schools, but then to change everything that's involved in that is also difficult. And I think it will, having that consistency across our district will increase our scores and also increase our learning with our students and our also our teachers engaging in that can have that professional development with people across the district and they can share what they're doing and say, hey, this is something that I did with this and it worked wonderfully, or I don't know how I'm going to present this to my students. Can you give me some ideas? And just kind of pick each other's brains and collaboratively plan together, whether you're in the same school or not, because we have that consistent curriculum resource all across the district. So I think it's a really good move on our district's part. And we'll see. Yeah, we'll see what happens with it for sure.
Yeah, and it sounds like a great way to go with, you know, like you pointed out, the kids that are moving within the district and, you know, being consistent, even with the Title I schools, to, you know, be able to hit the targets and, you know, having the components, like you said, with the Spanish, the gifted, talented, digital components, right, that kids are able to be you know, motivated to try harder. I think it's a good way to kind of come out of the pandemic and, you know, have something that's more commonly used, right, for a large district to have, like you said, the teachers collaborating across the district helps as well.
Right. And, you know, it'll be really nice because even when I go into the different schools that I support, everyone's doing something different literacy wise. And, you know, it'll be nice to go in and know that everyone's consistent and doing the same thing. And, you know, sometimes educators feel like that takes their passion out of it. But when I was in the classroom, I taught for 3 years under a grant, which was called Reading First. And, we were given a literacy curriculum and, you know, a lot of us at first were like, oh, great, it's scripted and we have to say this and do this. And, but I really found that you can be creative within that and you can bring your passion for teaching, even if you're using a resource like that. And, but that's where the collaboration is huge because for teachers that feel like they're strapped down and they can't do that, they really need to collaborate with others and realize that even though you're given this resource, you can be as creative and, as passionate about things that you used to be. Within a sort of like a guided curriculum.
Well, out of everything we talked about today on the podcast, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
I think for me, and we didn't really talk too much about this, but something that has really guided me in education and something that I always keep in my mind is building relationships, because I feel like building relationships with adults and with children and with parents, that's the foundation for learning. And if you think of like a house being built, I feel like, you know, you don't start with the roof first because that's just ridiculous. And I feel like when you're building the foundation for a great learning environment and where students are going to be motivated, where teachers are going to be motivated, administrators are going to be motivated and creating a positive workspace. It all starts from that foundation of building those strong, trusting relationships with the people that are in the building. And I feel like if you don't have that, you can't grow and you can't go forward. And I know when I got into education, you know, my first 2 years, and bless my students' hearts, because I honestly would stand up in front of my classroom and just be like, oh my gosh, what am I doing here? And and who has given me the right to teach these little humans? And am I doing everything that I need to be doing? And I think it was like my third year in education when I realized that, you know what, I need to base a lot of my teaching on that foundation of building those relationships with my students, because I found that when I had those strong relationships with them, they would do anything for me. They would, I mean, they would really just work their little tails off, knowing that I believed in them and I believed that every single student in my classroom could be successful. That's what they needed. They needed that security. They needed that trust, and they needed to know that there was someone that they could go to that believed in them no matter what. And even if they had a bad day, you know, I was still there for them, still pushing them along and still saying, you know, we're only human and we all have bad days and you can rise above it. And I still love you. And I think that you're an amazing person. And I know you're going to get out of this and you're going to rise above it and, you know, and see it through to the end. And I think for a lot of my students that I had, they never really had that before. And then realizing that they had that person was just huge in their lives. And I embrace that philosophy today when I work with adults. And the first thing I try to do is get to know them on a personal level, because I feel like building that relationship from the ground up it can lead to, I mean, sky's the limit. It can lead to so many things if you have that foundation. And so that's something that's huge. And one of my favorite quotes that I will share with you, and I'm sure everyone has heard it because it's super famous. It's by Maya Angelou. And this is something that I have in my email signature and that I really live by. And I'm going to share it with you. I've learned that people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And I think that that just encompasses what I was just talking about with relationships. Is I always try to make people feel like they are, they're worthy of success and that they can be successful. And I think that you can do anything with others when you build that foundation.
I think those are really important pieces to remember. And, you know, I kind of resonate with you with the beginning of the career when you're in a classroom and you feel like, you know, how are you going to engage those students, right? It changes once you start building those relationships, right? And I started out the same way, right? I didn't really put a lot of thought into building relationships. I just, you know, what I'd learned in teacher prep was, you know, having those expectations, classroom discipline, those type of things, but they didn't really focus a lot on building the relationships. So yeah, that kind of was an aha for me along, you know, the path of my career. And then I also do professional development where I speak out about building relationships. So I think we have a lot in common that way. And I really like that quote, right? It's important to remember you know, how you were treated and kind of what people, you know, kind of the relationship you had with people. Well, yes. Where could people reach out and find you online?
So, they can go to Jefferson County Public Schools, mm-hmm. Colorado, and go to the Gifted and Talented mm-hmm. page. I'm on that page. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn, just under my name, Anna Voth, which mm-hmm. My last name is spelled V as in Victor, O-T-H. Sometimes people don't hear that mm-hmm. the right, so I thought I'd spell it for everybody. But yeah, that's how you can reach me if you have any questions or comments or anything like that. I'd love to engage in a conversation with you and look forward to, receiving some feedback. That would be amazing because that's just going to make me a better person and help me to grow as well.
Yeah. And I think when people listen to podcasts like this, it's sort of their professional development as well. So, encouraging listeners to reach out to the guests on the podcast is great because that way they can let you know kind of what they've learned from your experience and kind of the story you've told today. So yeah, I hope we get some engagement. But thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Yes, thank you so much for asking me to be a guest and for having me come on. It was a lot of fun, and I look forward to maybe doing another one in the future.
Great.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.